We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 267. The Yankees are lifeless, they're sluggish, but this episode of the podcast will not be lifeless. It is a jam-packed episode. Scott, you are able to join for a few minutes because the hurricane has shifted courses. How's it going down there in Virginia?
It's going all right. The hurricane is dodging a lot of my family's homes, which is a good thing. So I'm able to get on, and I was supposed to be in Chicago this week. I had to cancel that trip. There's a bunch of stuff. This whole week has been just a crazy, crazy mess. So I appreciate all the guys coming on tonight and picking me up. I thought we were going to have to do this after a Yankees no-hitter. And
it was close.
And I'm not talking about a Yankees pitcher throwing a no-hitter. I really thought that we were going to have to get on here and talk, not after a Sonny Gray start, that's bad enough, but after a game where Jake Odorizzi of the Minnesota Twins no-hits the New York Yankees. I thought that was going to happen.
Dude, it's same shit, different day with this team. How many times does a mediocre pitcher or a mediocre bullpen no-hit them into the fifth, sixth, and tonight into the eighth inning? It just seems like it happens far too often over the last month and a half.
Yeah, I can count at least four games where there was a no-hitter going into, you know, fifth, sixth inning. And I know I've talked about this. Two of them were with James Shields and the Orioles' greatest free agent pickup. And his name is eluding me right now because it's late and I don't really care.
Cobb.
Alex Cobb, thank you.
Thought you were talking about Chris Davis.
No. Chris Davis, he doesn't pitch, but he's awful too. Guess who beat them today? The guys that are taking care of business that won 10-0.
The hungry like, team.
Let's just go and beat this lifeless, horrible Orioles team and get the hell out of here and see what the Yankees do. That's what happened with them.
Oakland's the hungry team right now. They're on a tear. The Yankees just completed a 9-game road trip, which we deemed the last most important road trip, the last most important stretch of games of the season, because if they took care of business against Oakland and against Seattle and against Minnesota, a team they have been crushing for 10 straight seasons,
right?
Then it wouldn't even really be an issue. The Yankees would lock up the home field in the wild card game and they could just start to focus on preparing for that. Instead, as we sit here after Wednesday, the Yankees are only a game up on Oakland in the wild card. And I get into everything with Wally Matthews and with Neil Keefe. We do two separate segments, and the wild card game and if the Yankees are going to be home, if they're going to be on the road, who they're going to play is a big portion of that. So, you know, a lot of this podcast is spent on that and some ramifications from that. But it is really getting nervous at this point. I'm getting nervous with the way the Yankees are playing, with the way the Oakland A's are playing.
You know, I was thinking about this tonight, and I obviously have not listened yet to your segments with Wally and Neil. So I don't know, if I'm going to be contradictory or saying along the lines of what one of these guys are saying. But I will say this, that if I'm sitting on the Oakland A's side, and I'm looking at them and I'm a spectator, I don't think they care where they play. Do they want to be at home? Sure. Does it matter? No, I don't think they care at all because this team has absolutely nothing to lose. They're playing with the house money. They're young. They're hungry. They're ready to go. You know what? They may be excited to go to Yankee Stadium and whoop the Yankees' ass at Yankee Stadium. I really don't think it matters one goddamn iota where they play on their side, but it's significantly important, I think. Maybe I'm wrong. Significantly important for the Yankees to play at home.
That's an interesting take because the A's could be thinking, hey, we don't want to have to fly cross country and then go start the division series in Boston. Why don't we just make that trip a few days early and only have to take a quick ride up from New York to Boston?
I don't think they care. Why would they care? Does it matter?
A lot of it is how you're
playing. What are
they going
to have, their big home crowd? They have a big home field advantage.
Do you remember 2015, how the Yankees sort of limped into that one game wild card? And yes, they were the home team, but did it look like they had the upper hand there against the Houston Astros? No.
Well, no, because Dallas Keuchel destroyed us that year.
But it's because a big portion of the playoffs is how you are playing then.
Right.
If you're the hot team, a lot of times it doesn't matter where it is.
Right.
And in a one game, do or die, winner take all, who the hell knows?
And in 2015, they couldn't score a run if they you know.
And
their
I'm not
life
saying this team. I'm not saying this team is the 2015 team all over again. But for 2 months, it's been a slow burn with this team. One of those things that we had been just waiting and waiting for him to get his swagger back, to get his gas and filth back, was Luis Severino. And I thought for the first five innings against Minnesota tonight, it looked like he got his swagger back.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I said this on the postgame video. I said that Severino looks good. But at this point, I'm looking for anything and everything. So maybe he wasn't as good as I thought he was. I don't know. Because I do feel like I'm searching and looking and hoping and praying and like doing everything possible for Luis Severino to come back, because I feel like he's our knight in shining armor. But at the same time, you know, there was no depth. He got into the sixth inning, couldn't get through the sixth inning. And I know he probably could have if the...
He got yanked a little early.
And I think Boone was just trying to get out of there.
He's trying to win a game. Boone's trying to win a game any way possible. He feels the pressure Oakland
right,
breathing
so,
down
so,
their neck.
But they're okay. Boom, right there. He's trying to win a game. Luis Severino's in the sixth inning with one out, and he wasn't the guy that he chose to get out of that inning. And that's your number one guy. So, yeah, he's trying to win a game. But the reason he was trying to win a game or the way that he was trying to win a game was pulling Luis Severino. And I mean, it worked in that instance. But, yeah, it's just concerning to me that he still is. And I know his pitch count wasn't crazy high. It was, I think, in the 80s or low 80s. So, yeah, I mean, it was good. It was encouraging. But at this point, I mean, I need him back. I don't need encouraging building up to what? What am I building up to?
Well, but this is all we have at this point, because if he can channel those first five innings and take that into the next start, maybe he has something. He's going to have a couple more starts before the end of the season. He got into trouble in the sixth inning. He left up a hanging changeup to the number nine hitter, Adrianza, and that went for the RBI double. And with the Yankees being no hit at the time, it felt like they were down 10-0.
Is he the third baseman? I think if he is the third, I mean, that was a ridiculous play that he made in the first inning. The Minnesota Twins were gloving the ball today too. I mean, the Yankees hit
a lot of balls.
They hit balls on the screws, and they couldn't find a hit. But they played some good defense. There's definitely no doubt about it. But you know what? Find some green, man. Thank God Greg Bird did it.
Yeah, Greg Bird was of course the guy to come through.
Right.
Just a miserable road trip overall. Like I said, 4-5 in the nine games. They have the home series coming up, last home series of the year. They're going to be playing Boston in this home series. And then they play Tampa and Boston to finish the season. Two teams that are going to be trying to screw the Yankees out of a home field in the wild card. So they're going to have to snap out of this funk sooner rather than later.
And two places that they have struggled very badly all year long. Going to Tampa and going to Fenway. Yankees have not been good at all in either place. So it's a tall task.
All right, we're going to get into the next two segments. First up is my conversation with Wally Matthews, and then the conversation I had with Neil Keefe. Scott, stay safe down there. Any last words?
That's it. If everybody who's going to the event this weekend, keep an eye out for some emails. The tickets will get transferred to you on Thursday, and the t-shirts are arriving. I know some of them arrived today, and a lot of the tracking numbers say Thursday delivery, so keep an eye out. Go look in the mailbox. T-shirts are probably sitting there tomorrow. And of course, NAS are the letters that spell She's deep, I never felt.
Joining me on the podcast now is Wally Matthews. He is a writer. He covers baseball, boxing, and now he has his own podcast called the New York Baseball Podcast. Wally, did we inspire you to start a podcast?
Yes, you did, as a matter of fact. I heard yours. I said, boy, why can't I do this? No, seriously, somebody asked me to do it. My partner, Dan Canobio, was starting it, and he knew that, you know, I was at the games all the time and had connections to some decent guests. So we started it, but yeah, definitely listening to yours and some others showed me the way to do it.
Appreciate that. So yeah, you've been covering New York sports for quite a long time at a number of different outlets, and you were the beat writer for the Yankees for what, 7 years?
Yeah, I actually did 7 seasons with ESPN, and then, you know, I considered myself the home beat writer for the Times last year, but I did about 65 out of the 81 games. And this year I've done about at least half of them, I would say. So let's say I've been around the team on a semi to full-time basis for the past 10 years.
And so in all of those years covering, and not just baseball, any sport that you've been covering, can you recall a team or a season where it's felt like on the surface of things, the results look great? The team is playing 35 games over 500. But if you watch this team every day, you know that things are trending in the wrong direction, and it feels like people are panicking as we're entering late September.
Well, you know what? I kind of saw this happening near the end of the 1998 season, as great as that team was. They kind of had a downturn late in the year, and there were some worries there. There were some worries in 2000, and they wound up going on to beat the Mets in the World Series. Look, this team has had a great season. There's just no question about it. Is it perfect? No. Is it flawed? Definitely. But you also have to factor in, they're in a division with a team that's playing at, you know, for most of the season, playing at a historically good pace. So, you know, if the Yankees win 100 games and come in second, I understand how, you know, I hate to use the word spoiled, but how sometimes entitled the fan base appears to be for the Yankees. But, you know, a team that wins 100 games and finishes 8 games behind the Boston Red Sox, you can't call that a failure. You just say they ran into a juggernaut.
Well, I was going to save this question for late, but you brought it up already. A failure. What would be a failure if they don't make it back to the division series? Is that a failure?
Like, yes, without a doubt. They got to win. They have to win the wild card game. Absolutely. I mean, look, and then if you go head to head with the Red Sox in the division series, fine. Okay, it's mano a mano. We'll see who wins. You know, which team is better. Blah blah blah. And if you lose that, you have nothing to be ashamed of. But if you don't get out of the division, the wild card game. And it would even be a failure if you fail to hold your position as the home team for the wild card game, I would think. But, yeah, you got to at least get to the division series this year.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. If they have to travel to Oakland or even Houston, if Oakland catches Houston, I think that would certainly be a failure. It would almost feel like they're defeated before they even throw the first pitch in that game.
Yeah, they can still win that game. They can still win that game. You know, that's the thing. So, you know, it's not so much – it's a disappointment if they have to play the game on the road. But if they win the game, forget all about it the next day.
So watching Boone this year, how would you assess his first year managing?
I think it's been pretty good. Obviously, there's been some growing pains. You know, he's made a couple of mistakes. I know people quibble over the bullpen usage. But, you know, what can you do when you have a starting staff that for a lot of the season was giving you 5 innings a game? I mean, obviously, you're going to have to be a magician to keep that bullpen, to not burn out your bullpen and to keep guys healthy enough to get you to the end of the game. I mean, let's not forget, for a while there, nobody could go 5 innings. So, you know, there was a lot of bullpen usage, and that's a tough thing for a rookie manager to manage. You know, and I don't care how much time he spent on the field or in the TV booth. It's not the same. I mean, once the game starts and you have to make in-game decisions, you know, it's a difficult job, and we've seen it. We saw it with Mickey Callaway also, you know, across town. You know, he made a ton of bad decisions, but he also didn't have the team that Boone had. I think overall Boone's been very good. I think he's been good dealing with the media. So obviously that gained some points for me because it's just so much more pleasant to be able to ask a guy a question and know you're not going to be condescended to or get a one-word answer or have the guy stalk out in tears as he did a couple, you know, the predecessor, Mr. Girardi, did a couple of times last year.
Well, with Girardi, I recall some press conferences early in his tenure that were not so much like that. So maybe it was the media's fault. They turned Girardi into that sort of personality.
No, I think what it was. Now, I don't think we turn. I think people's personalities get magnified when you see them twice a day. And, you know, anybody after a while is going to show his true nature. And I think that's what we saw with Joe. I think part of the thing is his intensity. He's just wound too tight, you know, and I never felt like he was enjoying the job, even when the Yankees were winning. I always felt like he was always under some kind of stress, some kind of anguish. And as September rolled around, you know, he didn't have the luxury of managing the 1998 team or any team that really ran away with anything. I always felt like it was getting to him, you know. And I said many times to my colleagues that if I felt as unhappy or looked as unhappy in my job as he does in his, I would quit. You know, I didn't understand why he did it. Honestly, he just seemed like he was miserable. And I don't get that feeling from Aaron Boone. I mean, he comes in every day. He's He's pleasant. You know, he can be humorous. Even, you know, when things go wrong, he pretty much keeps even keeled. And I think that's important in a manager, especially nowadays, because there's so much media focus on everything that they do.
With Girardi, didn't it almost seem like after the whole debacle in the division series last year with the replay, non-replay, that he loosened up? Maybe he knew at that point his job was gone anyway, so he just could enjoy the last week or 2 weeks of managing the Yankees?
Well, I think there's something to your theory. I think that he probably knew he was on borrowed time, but I do think, from what I understand, he was pretty shocked to find out he wasn't coming back. I mean, you know, in all fairness, the guy took the team within one victory in the World Series, where, you know, you wouldn't have given a nickel for his chances after the game in Cleveland. So, I mean, whether the team pulled together for him, whether he did a great managing job, you know, whether, it, you know, it was just that the Yankees played well for the home games, but that's basically where they won all their games last October. Whatever it was, he brought them right to the brink of the World Series. So I'm not surprised that he was surprised to get fired. But as you probably, and I'm sure you know, and as I know, this decision was made months before that, and he was gone even if they had won the World Series. I mean, they, you know, something happened there. Something happened in the front office of the Yankees that soured them on Girardi, and, you know, the decision was made that he was getting whacked no matter what happened.
I agree with you on that. And with Girardi, I think he actually didn't get enough credit for how much he got out of some of those 2013, 2014 teams, which, yes, had a $200 million payroll, but also had, you know, Kevin Youkilis and Ichiro Suzuki and Jason Nixon in the everyday lineup on a regular basis. And he got them to mid-80s wins. So, yes, you can say all that stuff about Girardi, but he did get results. And Boone is getting results too. Like I said, they're 35 games over 500. I do think, yeah, though, he's been learning a lot of things on the job.
Okay, but let me ask you this. How many victories do you think Boone has cost them?
It's honestly so hard to tell, to put a number on that. But I certainly think there were some early bullpen decisions where he used guys in interesting leverage situations that came back to backfire. And then I look at last night's game, and the Yankees are still trying to secure the number one wild card spot. And they threw out Sonny Gray, Jonathan Lasagna, and then Tommy Kahnle, three guys who are not going to pitch in October.
Yeah, well, you know, part of that was trying to position Severino, you know, for the games in Boston, and then hopefully, I guess, in Boone's mind anyway, line him up for the wild card game. But, you know, I think sometimes we overvalue the role of the manager. And I think something very, very indicative happened last weekend, and I'm sure you know the game I'm talking about, when Josh Bard ran the show because Boone was serving the suspension. And, you know, the moment came up where they had bases loaded and they're down three runs. And he sends Greg Bird up and keeps Giancarlo Stanton on the bench. Now, you know, Greg Bird comes within, you know, 6 inches of winning the game with a grand slam homer. But the decision was somewhat questionable because you're talking about the reigning National League MVP and a guy that hit 59 home runs last year, you know, and you're looking for a home run in that spot. There's no doubt about it. That's what you want your guy to do. You know, so which one gives you a better chance of hitting the home run there? You know, it seemed to me it was a strictly lefty-righty decision. And I asked Josh Bard about that afterward, and he gave me some bogus answer about how the matchup favored Greg Bird. And then I went back and looked at it, and it turned out that Giancarlo had actually faced the guy twice and had a double against him, and Greg Bird had never faced him. So the only way the matchup favors Greg Bird is if you're a lefty-righty reflexive guy, okay? Then I asked him what it was like to have to manage that kind of a game, you know, without Boone there, you know, to be thrust into a game like that where you suddenly have to make this big decision. You know what he said? You might remember the quote. He said, "The process remains the same no matter who's managing."
It's such a telling quote that Boone's not even making the decisions. It's coming from up
Thank
top.
You. That's correct. That's absolutely correct. So if you're going to point at Boone's mistakes, just understand those might not have been his decisions. They might have been coming from somewhere else.
And that's a great story. It's a great point. And I'm not a Boone hater. And anyone who listens to this podcast week in and week out knows I'm not a Boone hater. But I have also said at times that this is the team that Cashman has built. He's built a team that's going to hit a lot of home runs and going to strike out a lot. He's hit a team that is not going to bunt. It's just not going to happen, right? No matter how many times
this does not only come from Cashman, this comes from his analytics guys.
Well, yes, and Cashman, but that's what Cashman has turned into. He's turned into an analytical GM.
That's right. And a lot of GMs have. You know, I had Bobby Valentine on my podcast yesterday, and I said to him, you know, the role of the manager has changed so much. You know, and I told him the Josh Bard story. I said, you know, that a lot of times you don't even, you're out of the decision-making process. I said, do you think you could work in this environment? And he said, probably not. You know? I mean, it's the old school guys like Valentine. We saw it with Terry Collins last year. You're going to see it with Mike Socha at some point. You know, if they're not willing to just go reflexively along with what the analytics guys tell them to do, they're going to be out of jobs.
And Girardi may not have been willing to do that. That may have been the
I believe that's part of it.
The crux of the rift.
Yeah, he was analytically oriented, but I think he did, you know, in terms of in-game decisions, want to call his own shots. I mean, you know, John Glenn wanted to fly his Mercury capsule without any help from NASA. You know, and they said, the hell with that. You know, we're going to fly it from down here. And I think, you know, he rebelled against that. And I think Girardi rebelled against it as well.
Absolutely. All right, so rank the disappointments this season for the Yankees. Sonny Gray, Gary Sanchez, okay. And Greg Bird.
Okay. I'm less disappointed in Greg Bird than the other two, quite honestly, because I think some of Bird's problems are injury related. You know, I think he just could be one of these guys that, you know, has a bad body, unfortunately, and you know, just can't stand up to the rigors of everyday play. I hope I'm wrong about that because he's a terrific kid. He really is. Sanchez disappoints me maybe more than Gray. And I'll tell you why, because I don't see a bit of improvement in him behind the plate. In fact, I see some regression. And that was, you know, a big complaint about him last year, okay? And obviously, whatever work needed to be done in the offseason, in spring training, was not done because he's not a better catcher this year. In fact, he's a worse catcher than he was last year. The other thing that bothered me about him was when he came back from the DL just last week, Boone said, you know, he's in the best shape he's been in all year. And, you know, I had to put my hand up and say, Aaron, you know, why couldn't he get in that kind of shape before spring training? You know, and you know, I got some mealy-mouth answer, you know, pleasant enough, but no real commitment to what was going on there. But it seems to me that Gary Sanchez might have a work ethic problem. And, I hate to say that about a guy, but when you're 25 years old, if you can't be in rock-hard shape on April 1st or March 1st, you know, there's no excuse that, you know, you're suddenly working your ass into shape in September because you've been on the DL for a month. I mean, to me, that was a big red flag.
It was totally a backhanded slap, backhanded jab at Gary Sanchez when the first time he went on the DL. Right, when the first time he went on the DL, Boone said it as well.
Yeah, so that may be like the nice guy's way of saying, you know, we need this guy to get in better shape.
As
for Sonny, I suspect that he's been injured since they got him. I thought the Yankees got him too easily. I thought Billy Beane gave up on him too easily. I mean, he doesn't make a lot of money, you know, for a guy of his stature or his former stature. He did spend some time on the DL in Oakland, you know, the season that the Yankees traded for him, and also the year before. I just don't understand how a guy suddenly forgets to pitch, how to pitch. Now, I know he was pitching in a, you know, a much tougher ballpark to hit in Oakland. I know the AL East, you know, the hitting is much better. We know that. Maybe the pressure, although I don't think so. I wrote a story about Sonny Gray dealing with his father's death and playing a terrific game in high school, you know, throwing for a record in passing yardage the night his father died, you know. So I don't think he's the kind of kid that gets rattled by pressure. So I still suspect that there's a physical problem there. And, you know, quite honestly, I like him. You know, I do. I think that that he's in a tough situation, and I think he's as puzzled by this as anybody. I mean, this is a guy, you know, who met zeros with Justin Verlander in the playoffs when he was a rookie. So, you know, are we really going to say this guy can't handle New York?
You know, I mean, that's the narrative, though. The narrative is, and I think it stems from a lot of these awkward interviews that he gives. And you saw it last night on the Yes broadcast. He just keeps repeating himself, and he spews a lot of cliches. And it's all well and good that he needs to command the strike zone and keep it simple. But then he goes out there and falls apart four batters into the game. So
I know something about Sonny that might factor into that. You know, he stammers a little bit. He has a little bit of a speech impediment. And I think that especially when he's interviewed on television, I think he's very conscious of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why he's very careful with what he says, because he doesn't want to stutter on TV. I'm telling you, this is absolute truth. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not using that as an excuse. I'm just telling you this could be an explanation for why he doesn't come off well in those things. Because when you get him alone privately, he's fine. It's not like that.
Yeah, and I can totally buy that. I actually had a chance to talk with him for just a few minutes at Sabathia's charity softball event, and I asked him a couple of just fun questions, and he was very personable and that sort of thing. And but then I did ask him just a very PC question about how you've been dealing with your struggles on the mound this year, and that's when he sort of started to get a little jittery. So from that sense,
well, Andrew, he knows the narrative, you know.
Sure thing.
Even if he doesn't read the paper, somebody reads it to him. Trust me. Ain't nothing that we say or write that doesn't get back to these guys in some way.
Yeah, and I think for all three of those guys I mentioned, Bird, Sanchez, and Sonny Gray, it's been a completely lost season, and they're going to have huge question marks coming into 2019.
I'm surprised you didn't bring up Ellsbury. I guess you're not disappointed by him.
No, that's exactly what I expected out of Ellsbury.
Okay, that was too easy. Sorry.
Speaking of 2019, though, I know we're not fully looking ahead because it's still mid-September, but talking about the starting rotation, do you see Brian Cashman giving out maybe one-year deals again to guys like Sabathia and maybe even Happ, or do you think he's going to try and do something a little bit more significant this offseason after what's transpired in the rotation?
I think more likely for Happ than Sabathia. I think we're starting to see, you know, the beginning of the end for CC. You know, I think the knee just becomes too much of a problem as the season wears on. We've seen it the past couple of seasons. So now I really don't think CC's going to be coming back. I think they might make an offer to J. Happ. I mean, honestly, I don't even know what the free agent crop of pitchers is for next year. I know Cashman hates giving out long-term deals for pitchers. He's been burnt by them several times.
Yeah,
you know? He's got guys that he has under control, you know, for the next couple of years. You know, even Loaiza, you know, shows potential. I mean, I agree with you. I don't think he's ready to pitch this October, but he does have potential for the future. He can't give up on Severino because of one or two bad months,
you know, of course not.
And you still got Tanaka next year. So I think he would be reluctant, quite honestly, to enter into a long-term deal with a pitcher. You know, like I think maybe like A.J. Burnett was the last one that he was going to do that with.
Well, guys like Keuchel and Corbin are both free agents this year, and they're 6 years younger, 5 years younger than Happ, but they're going to be asking for five-plus year deals, and I don't see Brian Cashman doing that.
30-year-old guys, all right? Keuchel is 30 years old.
No, correct, but what I'm saying is they're 6 years younger than Happ.
I know. So. Yeah, but they're going to want longer-term deals. You know, you might be able to get Happ on a one and an option.
Yep.
Keuchel's going to want 5 to 7 years, and I just know from my conversations with Cashman that he's not giving a 30-year-old pitcher 7 years.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Totally agree with you on that. So as we, I read something you wrote back on July 27th. The title was, let me find it here. Yankees have no need to fear the wild card game this season. And I know part of what you were saying is I read the article. So part of what you were saying is that they should just start to prep for it because the Red Sox are on a historical tear and they need to be logical about this. But the headline does also, at the time in late July, the Yankees also looked like a juggernaut. So and Severino, we thought, was that ace. So it wasn't going to be an issue. But do you have you changed your stance on that a little bit at this point?
Well, when you read the headline, I was thinking, all right, is this the definition of that one didn't age well? Let me think about it. Actually, it did age kind of well because they are going to wind up the wild card, but now they do have something to fear because I didn't foresee the bottom falling out as badly as it did in the division race. I didn't foresee Severino continuing to struggle as long as he has. That was based basically on the fact that the Yankees were pretty much unbeatable at home at that point in the season. You know, and the thing was, there's no point in burning out your pitching staff trying to catch Boston. You're not going to catch them. I did the math, all right? I mean, you know, I'm not a rocket scientist, but I could do the math, and I knew what the two records had to be for them to make up the deficit. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And the odds were against. So I was like, look, you're probably going for the wild card. Line up your pitching now. Figure out who's going to throw that game. Make sure you play it at home, and you don't have to fear it. You'll go to the division series. I think that premise still stands up. The part that may not stand up is that they may not be playing the game at home.
Right, and that would be, I think, a huge issue. Although, guys, you know, Masahiro Tanaka pitches better on the road than at home. So I think at this point he might be.
As does Sonny.
Yeah, Sonny. Sonny, I guess if they get into a 22-inning game, Sonny Gray might trot out of that bullpen. But but Tanaka and Happ almost have surpassed Severino at this point for maybe getting the nod in that one game playoff.
Yeah, you know, depending on the matchup, I might prefer Happ because Tanaka has a tendency to give up the long ball, and depending on who you're playing, you know, you might not, and it might turn out to be a bullpen game. It really might. I mean, I don't see the Yankees going with an opener, but you may very well see Tanaka for two innings, Happ for two innings. And then, you know, start rolling out, you know, Chad Green, Robertson, DeCantis, and Chapman, assuming Chapman comes back. You know, that might very well be what you see. But it's interesting to me that it seems like Boone is lining up Severino, I guess, under the belief that, you know, you go with your best. And he is still, until proven otherwise, still, you know, potentially the best pitcher they have. So, I mean, that's what it seems like he's doing here. If Severino gets lit up in the two games, you know, his next two starts, maybe he shifts gears on that. But it just appears to me the fact that they used Sonny yesterday and pushed Luis to tonight tells me that maybe they are setting him up for the wild card game.
One thing we get a lot is people emailing us or tagging us on social media complaining about Larry Rothschild, and he was the main coach that is the holdover from the Girardi era, and you know, with what's happened to Severino over the last 2 months and what happened to Sonny Gray over the past year, I don't know enough about what happens in that clubhouse with these pitching coaches or hitting coaches, but people are calling for Rothschild's job. Do you foresee any coaching shakeup in the offseason?
I don't know, because I don't know how much. Obviously, Rothschild was a holdover because Cashman likes him, right? So, you know, it depends on how much influence Aaron Boone's going to have. He marches in there and says, listen, I think we've got to change pitching coaches. I don't know how much weight that's going to carry with Cashman. Larry has a great reputation among the Yankees. And there's always that argument, you know, how much difference does a hitting coach or a pitching coach make? You know, we were firing Kevin Long, and then when they didn't get better, we were firing Alan Cockrell. I even forgot what the other guy's name was, Jeff Pentland. He was there for, like, you know, 3 weeks.
Yep.
You know, maybe people will start now blaming Marcus for the fact that Sanchez and Greg Bird aren't hitting. But, I mean, it comes down to the players. These guys are professional ball players, and, you know, they don't need coaches. The same way I don't need a writing coach. Somebody can call, you know, an editor could say to me, hey, maybe next time when you write something like this, try it that way, and I'll take a suggestion. But it's up to me to do it. You know
exactly
what I'm saying? Nobody
100%.
Can make me into a better writer. And that's why, you know, Larry can't make Severino into a better pitcher. Severino's either got it or he doesn't have it. Now, you know, it's been a running joke with me for the past 7 years. You know, I'll go ask Larry, because every time you ask Joe Girardi a pitching question, you know, it didn't matter what it was. It was like, what's wrong with Severino's curveball, or who's pitching next Tuesday? He'd say, I have to ask Larry. Because Larry was it. I mean, he was it. He was the be-all and end-all of pitching, which surprised me, because Girardi was an ex-catcher. I thought he would, you know, have a little bit of say in the pitching, but he deferred everything to Larry Rothschild. And I think the fact that Larry's here and Joe isn't tells you how much the organization values him. So based on that, I would have to, if you ask me to predict, I would predict he's going to be here next year, unless Aaron Boone goes in and makes a strong stand and says, you know, I need a new guy.
Right. That's like an NFL head coach when the defense gives up 50 points, says, just go ask the defensive coordinator. Well, you are ultimately the person in charge here.
If you're looking for scapegoats, I mean, there's always something. You always, you know, fire a massage therapist or something, you know. But the other thing is, you know, it's so different now. Managers used to pick their own coaching staffs, and they don't anymore. You know, that's another thing. You know, Aaron Boone has to work with guys. You know, he did get to pick his bench coach and his first base coach and all, but he didn't get to pick his pitching coach, which is kind of strange. So it is possible that he will march in there. Let's say they win the World Series. He'll be in a much better position to go in and say to Cashman, this is what I want next year. Right?
Yeah,
this is the wild card game. I don't think he's going to be making it. He's just going to sit home and just keep his mouth shut and fly under the radar.
Well, he came from the ESPN booth, so he didn't have a ton of leverage.
No, he didn't have a ton of leverage to begin with, and they didn't pay him a lot of money. I mean, that, you know, listen, I know the Yankees don't, you know, they don't have to run any sales. They're fine in terms of money, but he costs them a lot less than Girardi does. I think he's happy just to be here at this point. But obviously, if he takes this team to the ALCS or even to the World Series, he's going to be in a much stronger position.
Do you have a do you vote on the awards, like Rookie of the Year or anything like that?
I have. I won't this year because I'm not officially the Yankee beat writer. But, you know, what happens is you know, every beat writer in every town gets a vote on one of the awards. Yeah, I've had them before.
If you did,
but I don't have one.
If you did, who would you vote for in the American League?
You're asking Rookie of the Year?
Yeah.
I guess Andujar. I think I would vote for Andujar.
Yeah,
you know,
despite the defense?
Yeah, in spite of the defense, because he's just been such a force at the plate. And they knew, I mean, the Yankees knew that he was going to be a defensive problem, you know, coming in. That was, you know, that was why they were so surprised that he hit as well as he did and made the team. Because, you know, they thought this kid needed some more time. And he probably does, you know, but it certainly his bat is ready. I just think he's been an impact player at bat more than Gleyber because, you know, obviously Gleyber missed some time with injury, and he's also, you know, had a slump. You know, Ohtani, I just, you know, I couldn't vote for him because of the fact that, you know, he's a DH, and he did also spend some time on it. I understand he's been an impact player as well, but I don't think he's had the impact that Andujar has had.
Yeah, and also some people are talking about Joey Wendell in Tampa, just if you're looking at advanced metrics.
Yeah, I haven't seen enough of him to say, and I'm not exactly an advanced metrics guy, not yet.
all right, final thing before we let you get out here. If you remember, last time you were on the podcast, it was a couple weeks before the McGregor-Mayweather fight, and you were not into it at all. Did you watch that fight?
And I was right. Did that age well or not?
No, I mean, it was fun. Not. It was fun for the maybe first 20 minutes, and then it got kind of old.
I'll tell you what the deal was. I would not spend $100 for it. It's, you know, impossible. I don't even like watching Floyd fight. As you know, as much as I admire him, his talent, I just think his fights are awful. And you know, I don't want to pay for them. I certainly, you know, I've never seen an exciting Floyd Mayweather fight, so I knew this wouldn't be one. But I was following the fight on Twitter that night, and I was shocked that, you know, some boxing writers who I respected, or I thought I respected, were talking about what a great fight it was. And I was thinking, wow, maybe I was wrong about this. And then the next morning, I got to watch it on YouTube because somebody posted it, and I was shocked again by how bad Conor McGregor was. He was friggin' awful. He was a sub-novice Golden Glover. I mean, if he was not Conor McGregor, he would never have gotten on Showtime. And I asked Stephen Espinoza, the president of Showtime, in an interview I did for the YES Network, I said, if this guy wasn't who he is, would you ever give him a spot on your network? And he said, no, of course not. The guy could not fight. And Mayweather carried him for 9 rounds and then scored his first knockout in like 11 years. Right. So let's not talk about Conor McGregor as a boxer. Forget it. He's terrible. Go back to where you belong, man. WWE/UFC.
And he is entertaining in the UFC, so you got to give him
except
that.
Except for one thing, he's a racist and a bit of some other things that I don't like. So honestly, I wouldn't pay a nickel to watch him.
All right, Wally, we appreciate you joining us. Good stuff, and we'll catch you next time.
Okay, Andrew. Good luck. Buddy.
I'm sitting in the crib dreaming about Learjets and coops, the way salt shoots and how to sell records like Snoop. I'm interrupted by a doorbell, 352. Who the hell is this? I get some quick cops.
Joining the podcast now is Neil Keefe. He has his own podcast and his own website called Keefe to the City. I'm sure you guys have talked to him on Twitter during Yankees games, and he's been on the podcast before. And now he gets to throw this in everybody's face. He wrote a book. Neil, what's up?
Oh, not much, Andrew. How you doing tonight?
Good. So quickly, you were just telling me about your book, The Next Yankee Era, My Transition from the Core Four to the Baby Bombers. Quickly, why don't you tell people about that?
Yeah, so I wrote it. It's sort of based off the postseason run last year, you know, being in attendance at all the home games. It sort of goes back through from the wild card game right through game 7 in the ALCS. And it's sort of, you know, a personalized look at a Yankees fan experience during that time with flashbacks to other, you know, big games, big events, you know, it's sort of my life during the Brian Cashman era, for, you know, from being in college during the ALCS against Boston and living in Boston during that time to some of the bigger playoff wins, you know, during the Cashman era. And it's, you know, so it sort of takes you through last postseason flashbacks to big moments over like the last 20 years of Yankees baseball. So it's available on Amazon Kindle right now for download. And then eventually in the near future, it'll be available also for iBooks. And then quite possibly the paperback version, though, you know, I feel like everyone now is more into eBooks anyway. So that's been the way it's gone. And it's gotten off to a really great start.
That's awesome. Congrats on finishing that. How long did it take?
Thanks. I started it pretty much during the off season, you know, here and there, and then, you know, really revved it up as this season started getting going. So it just, it took, you know, a few months to sort of go back and, you know, get a good memory on everything that's happened and, you know, go back through Baseball Reference. And that was a big help, you know, reliving the postseason, watched every single game once again from last year. So certainly those games 6 and 7 in Houston were pretty painful to watch once again. But yeah, it took a few months to complete.
Nice. Cool. And yeah, so as you were saying, it was sort of reliving it through the playoff run last year, which was so much fun. Sort of unexpected. And now this year, as we're entering October again, nearing closer to October, I actually put out a Twitter poll yesterday, and I asked very simply, would you rather the Yankees play at home in the wild card game against Houston or on the road in Oakland? Because those are two possibilities right now. 57% of people prefer to be at home against Houston rather than having to travel back to California. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're put in either of those situations, the Yankees probably don't win either of those situations. Going across the country, I tweeted this out the other night. Basically, game 162 is a Sunday afternoon in Boston. So let's say, you know, that game might mean a lot. The Yankees might have to go balls out in that game to avoid going to Oakland for the one game playoff or going on the road. But let's say Houston wins the division. Let's say that game, you know, it doesn't really mean anything, or maybe it does, but let's say the Yankees win the second wild card. So after that game on Sunday, they will then have to fly Sunday night from Boston to Oakland, get into Oakland, you know, either late Sunday night because of the time difference, early Monday morning. Then they'll have, you know, a workout the next day. Then they'll play Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, so 5 o'clock Oakland time. Let's say the Yankees win. That game ends around 8 or 9 p.m. Pacific time, so 1 a.m. here. They get on a flight 6 hours back. They get back sometime, you know, late morning, early afternoon, back to Boston on Thursday. Then they have to go to Fenway, have a workout, and then the next day they play and probably have to face Chris Sale. So if the Yankees are in that situation, I would rather they just lose the wild card game because I do not want to sit through you know, I'm dreading a five-game series against the Red Sox as is because, like I've said my whole life, there's nothing to gain from this. If the Yankees beat the Red Sox in the playoffs, they're supposed to because they're the Yankees. And if they lose, it's the end of the world. And even in a year where the Red Sox might be the best regular season team in Boston history, those rules still apply. So if the Yankees are going to have to go across the country, then come back, burn whichever starter the organization deems their best starting pitcher, and then have to face Chris Sale and then, you know, play Boston on back-to-back days, it's going to end poorly. So if they can't get this home field advantage for the wild card, it's actually a disaster. It's I can't even begin to tell you where, you know, where we were last year when they lost to Houston, you know, feeling great about baseball again for the first time in 5 years with Yankees baseball. You could actually see the future, and to go on such an unexpected run. And, you know, those nights at the stadium in October were so amazing. And then, you know, you really had no expectation, and for them to get you within one game of the World Series, it was awesome. And it was as good of a season as any, even some of the championship years. And now where they are, it's basically 2015 where they're just limping to the finish line. And I just have an awful feeling about the wild card game to this point. This team has gone from so fun to watch 2 months ago to just it's frustrating and disappointing and makes me sick every single night.
It's still a couple weeks away, so things could obviously change. And I heard Boone talking to Francesa today, talking about how really we just need to get back to playing good baseball. And that's very easy for him to say, but it's so true, because if the Yankees are playing well down the stretch and then they have to play and they do win home field advantage in the wild card game, I think people will feel a little bit differently than we are now speculating about a game 3 weeks from now.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron Boone's an idiot. Like, he's just flat out an awful in-game manager. He's the reason they're in this position. You know, you could talk about Gary Sanchez having an awful season, Greg Bird just, you know, whatever happened to him, the injuries to Judge, Stanton being a disappointment. You know, there's a lot of things down the line that you could blame on the players, but there's no reason that this thing should now be at two games. And with Oakland playing Baltimore on Wednesday night, you know, they're going to win that game. They're going to win the next day, too, because they're playing them again. So this thing could be tied up by the end of the day on Thursday. And the only reason it's there is because of Aaron Boone. And at some point in these next 17 games, he's going to start managing with urgency. It has to happen. It hasn't happened yet through the first 145 games this season, but it's going to come to the point where this thing is either one game back or tied, or the A's take the lead, and he's going to have to start, going to Betances in the fifth inning with guys in first and third and one out. And he should have been doing that in the middle of the summer, because we wouldn't be in this position right now. And a lot of people on Twitter and Yankees Twitter, I know you're on there. We talk all the time, whether it's positive people, pessimistic people, realist people. The Yankees, if they lose the one-game playoff, I don't care if they win 103 games, it's a disaster of a season going from where they were last year to adding the NL MVP. It's a train wreck. And Aaron Boone and his lackadaisical la-di-da attitude has sort of given everyone this calm demeanor that it's okay to lose because there's tomorrow. Well, there's 3 weeks left in the season, less than 3 weeks, and they're in a really bad spot.
I was actually wondering at what point in the podcast you would refer to Boone as an idiot, and it only took 5 minutes. So good job there. But with I agree with you that he has been pretty casual for the past few weeks, as we've seen this team trending downward. And it starts with what happened last night, where Sonny Gray started, Johnny Loaisiga came in, and then Tommy Canley comes in the bases loaded situation, gives up a grand slam. Those are three guys we're not going to see in October. Those three guys might not even make the postseason roster. Certainly Loaisiga, I don't know what the point of Sonny Gray would be, other than maybe if you get into a deep, deep extra innings game. So why, when you're still fighting for your home game wild card, are you using three guys you want no part of in a big situation?
Yeah, I mean, Boone just has no clue. He has absolutely no clue. And there's this theme that because he's a rookie manager, it's going to take time for him to, learn how to use the bullpen and utilize the right guys, the right situation. And this guy's whole family is Major League Baseball. He's been around baseball his whole life. How does experience or years as a manager going to make him better at that? How can the whole world know, not to bring in AJ Cole when the game is tied or losing by one and you have a chance to come back? How can the whole world not see Sonny Gray, 6 out of 7 guys reach base, he's still in there? It's honestly crazy.
It's a good point you bring up, because this is fitting together very well, this podcast, because I just talked to Wally Matthews about this very thing, talking about questionable in-game decisions by Boone. And he's made the argument from just talking to the coaches that a lot of these decisions are coming from above Boone's head. So I understand that Boone's the manager and he's going to get blamed. That's part of the job. When you sign on the dotted line, part of it is you get killed when things go wrong. But do you think some of this is just Boone being instructed how to act, how to manage?
No, I don't think so at all. I think he gets, suggested, but when, I don't think anyone's telling him, what situations or, whether people are, passing the word down, calling the dugout. No one's telling him when to bring in relievers at what time, because the team was better off with Girardi, and he wasn't doing this. I mean, for all the criticism I gave Girardi over the years, he wasn't bringing in the 25th and 24th guy on the roster in crucial spots just because the innings said so. And Girardi was the biggest proponent of set bullpen innings for relievers, but Boone has taken it to another level. And I thought we were going to get, a fresh look, fresh ideas. The idea that the closer is worthless in the ninth inning facing the 7-8-9 hitters with a 3-run lead, and he's more valuable in the sixth inning with 2 men on and 1 out when you need a strikeout. But he's just taking it to a whole nother level. And the idea that he can just game in and game out, not get it. I mean, like you said, last night on Tuesday night, they used three guys who most likely aren't even going to be on the postseason roster. Tommy Canley is just garbage. For as good as he was last October, they always say how volatile bullpen arms are, and from one year to the next, you can't predict anything. But he's just going right down the tube. Sonny Gray is done as a Yankee. I can't imagine that they come back with him next year, even though I'm less hard on him than most people. And Jonathan, Johnny Lasagna there, he's great. I like him, but you can't pitch him, every 10 days. He doesn't know if he's a starter, he's a leaver. I don't expect anything from him. His season was marred by injuries. Then he was down in the minors. Then he gets called up as a September call-up. He has no idea what date he's going to pitch. So for him to go out there and get hit around a little, you expect that. He's a rookie. He's in an unknown, uncharted territory. But for Sonny Gray, I mean, the Yankees make me laugh because you would think that they have, you know, the Astros rotation or some great rotation that they're so good that they could give their rotation a break and throw Sonny Gray in for a spot start. Your five starters as is aren't even good enough, and now you're throwing in your crap six guy who hasn't been a starter in 6 weeks, and now you're pitching him in games when the A's are playing the Orioles. It's honestly, it drives me crazy, and I'm losing my mind over this team because...
Oh, I can tell.
For the last 3 weeks, I've said none of these games matter, and they really don't. They're going to play in the one-game playoff no matter what, but now they matter because they might not play at home, and the next game that's mattered since the Sunday night loss at Boston was October 3rd, and at this point, you know, it kills me to say, but I don't feel good about this team at all. 17 games left. They could win the last 10, be on fire going in the playoffs, but that's certainly not going to help them win one game. You know, the playoffs
could.
Are a crap
it's all, no, the playoffs are about how you're playing, how the hot team usually wins in the playoffs. And that's like, look at the Indians last year. They went on an unbelievable run, won 20 something games in a row, and then that got bounced by the Yankees because the Yankees got hot at the right time. So I understand where you're coming from. I'm extremely frustrated too. I think a lot of people are extremely frustrated. But the team does have 3 weeks to try and turn it around before that wild card game.
No, I get that. And like, you know, maybe they win out. Maybe something nuts happens. Maybe they win the last five games of the season. But their schedule is way harder than the A's. The A's won't see a team going to the postseason the rest of the way. They've got, you know, the game on Wednesday against the Orioles, another one on Thursday. They play a lot of games against the Angels, who suck. The Yankees have to play six games against Boston, and they're probably not going to have anything to play for. They're probably going to be, you know, giving guys innings off, you know, spot starting people. But at the same time, Boston has a chance to destroy the Yankees season. Yep. They're going to do that.
And Tampa.
And it makes me laugh because these people that have been scoreboard watching the Red Sox the last few weeks when this thing got down to five games, or, you know, when it went back up, then it got down again. I mean, Boston, they come back every single night. They're down 6-0 in the eighth, they come back and win. So when they get the chance to ruin the Yankees season and, you know, in the next week and the week after that, they're going to take that chance and they're going to run with it because they would rather see Oakland in the ALDS than the Yankees, that's for sure. So if they could prevent that and if they could send the Yankees 3,000 miles across the country, 3,000 miles back before the ALDS, they're certainly going to do the best they can to do so.
All right, let me play devil's advocate a little bit with the Boone and Girardi comment you made a little while ago. Because if Boone listens to this, he's going to start crying, and I'll just feel bad for him. But one thing we had with Girardi every season is Dellin Betances' arm falling off in September. And this year, Dellin Betances has been probably their best relief pitcher to this date. I'm probably jinxing him at this very moment, but Boone has done a good job with certain players managing their innings, I believe.
Yeah, I think so, but, you know, it's hard to give Boone any credit at this point in the season, especially, you know, people want to say, oh, you know, they already won 90 games. He's a rookie manager. Well, 7 out of the 15 teams in the American League are going to lose at least 88 games. They're in a division with the Orioles, who are one of the worst teams in the history of baseball. And, you know, the interleague games they played crap teams. They went 3-3 against the Mets, 2-2 against the Nationals, both bad teams. So, if you want to say Boone, the best thing he's done is manage arms, you know, I guess. But, you know, Betances, for me, I've always been a Betances fan. I've never gotten on him, even with his struggles last season. Never said a bad word about the guy. When this team was, you know, awful for 3 years, he was the MVP of the team. He was the best reliever in baseball. He got, you know, screwed over, nickeled and dimed by the front office, you know, which was just an embarrassing thing for a homegrown kid from New York City who was, you know, has done everything, said everything right, been great for this team his entire career. So I've always been a Betances fan. So if we want to say the one thing out of this whole season Boone has done well is prevent Betances from, you know, going down the toilet the way Girardi did last year, you know, okay, I guess so. But that's, you know, that's a stretch at most.
And one thing, and it's, we've been sort of, everything we've been saying has been highlighting the fact, but if you just look at the trends month by month with this team, they had a 640 winning percentage in April, then a 680 in May, 667 in June, 600 in July, 567 in August. And right now they're 5-5 in September. So the trend is not in the right direction for this team, and it's multifaceted. And one of the things that pisses me off on a nightly basis is watching this offense struggle against mediocre to just downright terrible pitching. Between Ronaldo Lopez for the White Sox and Daniel Norris for Detroit, Mike Fiers in the Oakland bullpen, and then Kyle Gibson in the Minnesota bullpen, like, why does this team struggle with still, don't give me Aaron Judge is out. there still is enough talent in that lineup to hit some of these mediocre pitchers.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that they're so right-handed heavy. I mean, Didi Gregorius is their best left-handed hitter, and he's, you know, constantly in the middle of the lineup when he does. He's not a middle-of-the-lineup guy. You know, he had the huge April with a lot of power. His walk rate was out of this world, but, you know, he's come crashing back down to earth when it comes to walks. And he's, you know, he's a good player. He's a good hitter. He's a good contact guy. Doesn't strike out a lot, but he's not a 3-4-5 hitter by any stretch, even though he was that in the playoffs last year, even though he's been that for most of this year. But they have to put in there because he's the only guy left-handed who can hit. Greg Bird, you know, I've been a huge Greg Bird supporter. At this point, there's nothing you could say to support him because he's just been flat out awful. You know, maybe it's the lingering effects of the ankle problem. You know, he's only 2 years removed from his shoulder surgery. So maybe Greg Bird is never actually going to realize the potential we saw in 2015, the potential we saw last postseason when he had, you know, an over 400 on base percentage. But the Yankees, they're in serious trouble because let's say they beat Oakland and they get to play Boston. You know, from then on out, you know, outside of Oakland, who has really no good starting pitcher to throw, if they throw, you know, Fires, if they throw Cahill, they're going to bullpen game it, whatever they're going to do. After them, you've got Boston, you've got Cleveland, you've got Houston. You're just going to see an elite starting pitcher every single night. And what the elite starting pitching has done to this team is flat out scary with sliders away. I mean, you thought it was an issue last year with Judge and Sanchez. It's still an issue with Sanchez this season. Which Giancarlo Stanton will swing at any slider that's in the other batter's box. Like, it is mind-blowing. He is Starlin Castro, just a bigger version and with more power. He has the same plate discipline, which is none. He'll swing at anything. And, you know, people want to say, oh, 33 home runs. He's come over to a new league. You know, give him credit, this, that. He was hot for a few weeks. They made him out to be a hero because he DH'd for like 80 games in a row. But he's been a huge disappointment. Aaron Hicks, I tweeted, you know, I think last week, his numbers against Cleveland, Houston, and Boston, and then his numbers against the rest of the teams. And it's just scary because he's a guy who will go out and get his, you know, pad his stats against the number 4 and 5 starters. But 3 weeks from today, they're not going to see any more 4 and 5 starters. So Aaron Hicks was garbage in the playoffs last year. You can't expect anything from him going in this year, but the team's going to hit him first because of his on base percentage, even though those numbers didn't come against good pitching. They're certainly not going to hit him at the bottom of the order where he belongs. They're probably going to put Gleyber Torres there, which is just crazy because Boone's still hitting Gleyber Torres behind Austin Romine, you know, 3 months after he was hitting him behind Tanaka against the Mets. So the lineup has a lot of holes. It has a lot of problems. It has good power numbers, and they'll beat up on you know, crap pitching half the time. But when it gets crunch time and they're facing elite pitching in 3 weeks, it's going to be real ugly.
Well, the Yankees have also made they've performed well against bullpens, at least in the first half of the season. They would beat up on bullpens. So that's one thing. The template, if you do get past the one game wild card, is keep it close through 5 innings, then your bullpen's going to beat the other bullpen. But with the way the offense is trending, I don't have confidence in that. And I understand Judge has been out. He's going to be back, who knows, in the next week or 2 weeks. We don't know if his wrist is going to be 100% healthy and if he's going to be back on track. Gary Sanchez will hit a 460-foot home run in the third deck in Minnesota and then ground out with the bases loaded the next night. So Gary Sanchez, who the hell knows? I don't think Greg Bird's going to be on the postseason roster. Stanton, you said he's been a complete disaster. I think that's
no, I said disappointment. He is a disappointment. If you're not disappointed in it, I mean, he's 33. He's hitting .260. You know, when you hear his numbers and you see 59 home runs, certainly that's hard to ever replicate ever again. That's a, you know, a generational season. But when you watch him night in and night out, which, you know, I didn't, you know, I watch a lot of baseball. I bet on a lot of baseball. So I saw a lot of Marlins games when he was on the Marlins. But when you actually watch every single at bat of his, it gets really hard to watch when he's going badly.
And he's been going badly recently. Last 21 games, a 524 OPS, just one home run. I thought when he got his 300th home run, the monkey was off his back. That hasn't worked. And now Boone moved him back to the cleanup spot where he is performing better than in the two spot. He's got 1,010 OPS out of the cleanup spot. Do you think we're starting that lineup change will help get him out of his funk?
You know, maybe. I mean, it never surprises me when he hits a home run or goes 1 for 4, but he seems to be, you know, he had that one game a couple months ago where, you know, he hit the big home run to tie it. He hit the walk off and, you know, the two home run game against Keuchel, the two home run game on opening day in Toronto. You take away those three things, that's, you know, pretty much it.
I don't like this game. I don't like the takeaway game.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not taking away. I'm saying you take those three games, that's it. I mean, we're at game 145, and he has played well against Boston. I'll give him that. He has hit very well against Boston, which most big-name free agents, when they come to the Yankees, or really any new Yankee, usually sucks against the Red Sox. It's usually the ex-Yankees that do well against the Yankees. But for Stanton, he has hit Boston. I will give him that. That's been his biggest contribution to this team. But, you know, maybe he'll turn it around these next few weeks, but it doesn't matter. Like we said earlier, nothing that happens between now and game 162 matters on October 3rd, either at Yankee Stadium or in Oakland, because it's one baseball game. Anything can happen. It's bananas. Look what happened last year. 5 minutes in, the Yankees are down 3-0, second and third, one out. And they're not going to face that same caliber of team. The A's are not that bad. You know, the A's are probably going to pass the Yankees. As we're talking right now, they're up 7-0 in the third inning in Baltimore. So it's at least getting, you know, it's going to be 1.5 in a couple hours. If the Yankees don't win, it's going down to 1. Maybe they'll hold it at 2. But when it comes to Stanton, I don't know. I don't expect him to do anything in the playoffs because he's not going to see fastballs. They're going to throw breaking balls low and away, and they'll, you know, walk him if they have to, and he just won't walk. He'll swing away because that's what he does. So I don't expect much. If Judge doesn't come back and isn't even close to being, you know, he doesn't need to be the 52 home run guy, but if he's not even, you know, 80% of that, then it doesn't matter anyway, because he is the lineup. He's the best hitter in the entire lineup. He makes the lineup stronger. He makes the lineup deeper and longer. So he is the team. If he doesn't come back, this thing's not going anywhere anyway. So I think it pretty much starts and ends with Aaron Judge.
I think that's been, we knew he was obviously great. We knew he was fantastic after what he did last year, but I think his absence has really been highlighted how much the Yankees have been struggling. But I don't know if these minor lineup changes, I think they're overrated. Moving Stanton down to the four spot, I don't agree with Gleyber Torres batting ninth, but I don't know what even the point of moving him there or number six is. I hate when and I know you do complain about the lineup a lot, but these players, no matter where they hit, 1 through 9, should be hitting better than they are. That's the bottom line.
No, I agree. I think my biggest problem with the lineup, if you want to put Stanton fourth or third or Sanchez fifth, sixth, it's things like that that don't really matter. But when you're hitting Gleyber Torres ninth behind Austin Romine or behind, you know, Neil Walker or behind the pitchers, he's hitting behind the pitchers.
Turn it over, man. Turn that lineup over.
That is the most idiotic strategy in all of baseball.
That's an analytical strategy that's clearly coming from above Boone. I have to believe that.
I mean, you know, maybe. I think my biggest problem is Aaron Hicks is, you know, they're going to bat him first in the playoffs. That's a given. You know, one game playoff.
Do you want Brett Gardner there? Because Brett Gardner has been
MIA. No, I don't. I mean, Brett
MIA.
Gardner, let's be real. Brett Gardner, he had a great career. You know, he's been on this team for 11 seasons. He's made over $62 million, which no one would have thought when he came up, you know, a decade ago. So he's had a nice career, but Brett, it's time to go. I mean, you got Kraken 700 OPS. They've got McCutcheon. They've got Hicks. They've got Stanton. They've got Judge. Clint Frazier, they didn't trade. He's waiting in the wings. So I just, maybe they buy him out and offer him a lower deal, but there's no way Gardner can be picked up at $12.5 million. Just like there's no way, I don't think you give CeCe $10 million to come back in again next year, but that's 100% going to happen. But back to Hicks, I guess he's going to bat, you know, leadoff. I'd bat Judge there. I want Judge getting the most at bats, and people say, well, you want him to come up with guys on base. Well, Aaron Hicks is just going to make the first out of the game. He's going to come up without anyone on base anyway, so you might as well get him the most possible at bats.
I understand that Aaron Hicks, his batting average isn't great, but his on-base percentage is pretty good.
Yeah, it's solid. It's solid, and, you know, I crushed him for the longest time, and he's finally come around, and, you know, he's turned into a nice player, and, you know, I've apologized for all the times I said that, you know, they should get rid of him over the last few years. But then again, you know, he's 7 years into his career. You know, most people don't get 7 years of chances because they were a first-round pick when they were 18 years old hitting with a metal bat. So, you know, he finally broke through. It took him, you know, through his late 20s to get there, but he's finally is a nice player, and he's going to hit first, so I just got to live with that. I think, you know, the biggest gripe, aside from where Torres hits with me, is everyone offseason was looking forward to the idea of Judge, Sanchez, Stanton, and Sumwater hitting back-to-back-to-back. We only saw it a handful of times. You know, injuries played a large role in that. Sanchez, you know, not being able to hit period also played a role in that, but if they're all healthy, you know, 3 weeks from tonight, I would love to see, if you're going to put Hicks first, put those next three guys, you know, 2, 3, 4, because Gary Sanchez, yeah, he's hitting 180. Yeah, he's had a train wreck of a season, but he still has that. He's still Gary Sanchez. That's still in him. You know, he's not going to be a 180 hitter for the rest of his career. He's not just going to fade away. And, you know, we saw him get hot, you know, at times this year. He was hot the other night. Then he has a bad game the next game. But all it takes is, you know, him getting one mistake pitch in the one game playoff that could open up and change that game.
I agree with you on Gary Sanchez. And another thing that Scott and I have talked about and fans have talked about all season is Gary Sanchez versus Austin Romine and who should be the starting catcher. I think people who say Austin Romine should be the starting catcher are out of their damn mind. But at the same time, you can't sit there and tell me that Gary Sanchez doesn't frustrate the hell out of you, because he has 39 wild pitches allowed and 532 innings caught. And the other night in Oakland, when Severino was on the mound, he was a train wreck. He looked absolutely lost. Couldn't catch pitches 2 inches off the plate. So at a certain point, I think you have to say to with Gary Sanchez, this is a lost season for you.
Yeah, I think so. I think he just, you know, he's not going to hit 300. He's not going to hit 200 probably at this point. So he needs to look at the numbers, realize, you know, this was a bad year. Next year will be different. I'm not going to replicate the 33-90 year I had. I'm not going to go on the historic run I went on 2 years ago. Just go from, all he can do is improve from here forward to the end of the season. He's another guy where, yeah, I'm a huge Gary Sanchez fan. He's probably my favorite player on the team. I've never said a bad word about him. He's exciting. He was the, you know, really the first guy because of Bird's injuries to come and sort of change what we've saw out of the Yankees from 2013 to 2016. And I still believe in him. I think the pass balls, the, you know, the lazy approach, you know, I was at the game in Tampa when the ball got away and he walked to it and the runner scored from second. You know, and then he didn't hustle down the first baseline before he went back on the DL. And, you know, it pains me to watch him do that because, yeah, at times he has these brain farts where, you know, he doesn't give 100%. And that's a shame because he's playing baseball for a living. Why wouldn't he give 100% every single opportunity? But he still is the best catcher in baseball. And these pass balls are drastically, you know, it's crazy how much attention it gets every time the ball's in the dirt and he blocks it. It's like people are like, he blocked the ball. They go crazy. If it gets by him, they go even crazier. Tuesday night, Austin Romine let a ball go off his glove. No one said anything. The next inning he hits into a double play. No one says anything. So people that want Austin Romine to start, you know, just take a lap because you're losers. You're just like, what are you thinking? I know you had a tweet the other day about comparing their war. Gary Sanchez couldn't be worse this year. Like he could bat left-handed and probably do the same. And he still has a better war than Austin Romine, who's having a career year, who will somehow maybe get traded, maybe become a starter somewhere else. And he'll never do this again. But that just goes to show you that Gary Sanchez at his ultimate worst, the bottom he could ever be. And he's still better than Austin Romine.
All right, let's talk about something positive. Let's talk about Jay. Let's talk about Jay Happ, because he's been great, with the exception of that one start against Detroit, since he's been with the Yankees. 46 2/3 innings to a 2.70 ERA and a 6.71 OPS allowed. And one of the things that I know Cashman and Boone talked about when they acquired him was his peripheral stats are better than maybe the traditional stats are telling us. And I think we're seeing that play out, because his batting average on balls in play with Toronto was .286. And right now with the Yankees, it's .246. And his ERA has come down. So maybe the Yankees have a little bit better defense than the Blue Jays, which I find funny because I think the Yankees have been poor defensively. But what we're seeing is Jay Happ pitching better, which is what the Yankees thought when they were getting him, giving them stability, which they drastically needed.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Jay Happ's been great. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better deadline acquisition. He had the one clunker last week, but aside from that, he's been, you know, better than you could ever imagine. And I would go right ahead and, you know, as long as he stays healthy from here to the end of the season, I would offer him a free agent deal because he's a veteran lefty. They need that presence in the rotation. You know, CeCe's a veteran lefty, but he's no longer at the stage Happ is, even though, you know, they're relatively close in age. Happ, you know, still can dominate. CeCe, if he gives you, you know, 5 innings, 2 runs, you know, you'll take that 5 innings, 3 runs. CeCe now can barely give you 5 innings, but Happ's been great. I have nothing, you know, he's been awesome. And if it comes down, you know, right now there's, you know, people expect either him or Tanaka to start the one game playoff instead of Severino because he's been so bad for 2 months. You know, that is a dilemma that keeps me up at night. I don't know who should start that game. When it comes to Tanaka, I mean, I trust him. You know, he was great in the postseason last year. He was solid against the Astros in 2015. He wasn't lights out. I mean, five innings, two runs. You know, that's all right. Happ and Tanaka, the problem with them is when they make a mistake, it's probably leaving the ballpark. When Severino makes a mistake, they're probably going to foul it off. So, you know, to get Severino and not pitch him in that game, I don't know. It's honestly, I don't know what the right decision is. And that decision, if they lose that game, is going to be second-guessed like nothing else because they have three solid options to go with. They just have to pick the right one.
Yeah, it's something that it's really all people are talking about at this point because it's the only thing that's still left to be decided other than now where that game is going to be played, which we've already covered. Boone talked about it. Did you listen to his Francesa spot today?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, and he was talking about how it could come even down to the final weekend on who they decide to pitch because if they have to play a game at Fenway Park that weekend that could clinch them home field, well, then you're not going to save your guy for the one game wild card. You're going to use him then so you can get that home field.
Yeah, I agree. And I knew Mike had to ask him that, but obviously he's not going to, you know, give an answer. Even if he knows, oh, it's Severino or it's Tanaka or it's Happ, he's not going to say it, you know, with 17 games to go. So I get he has to ask the question, and I certainly get that he's not going to give a real answer. No matter what, the Yankees are going to have the better starting pitcher in the wild card game. That's a given. Any of those three guys are better than anything the A's are going to throw. The A's bullpen is solid, so I wouldn't be surprised if they just go straight relievers the whole time. I wouldn't be surprised if they go Fires. I wouldn't be surprised Cahill. Outside of Cahill's start against the Yankees, his ERA in Oakland is crazy. It's, you know, it's in the ones, I believe. He could certainly shut them down. He struggled with them last week, but that doesn't mean anything. Like we said, it's one game. Anything could happen. So the thing that scares me the most is, you know, Oakland is just like they just have that feel. They just have that peskiness to them. Everyone on that team hits for power. It seems like every ball that's in play is a line out, you know, right at someone or a line, you know, a line drive in the gap. So it's scary. And they're certainly not a team you want to see. We would have been much better off playing the Mariners if they didn't go in the tank like they always do.
No one thought the Mariners were going to actually make it.
No. And I think going to Oakland, I mean, the Yankees haven't played well in Oakland in a long, long time. And to do the cross country trip and come back and face that team, which is, you know, it's a bad combination. And I just don't know. I mean, even if they play him in Yankee Stadium, I don't feel that great, but I certainly feel much, much, much better than if they have to go across the country.
And another thing about Oakland is that they play better defense than the Yankees, and I really think that the Yankees defensively in the second half has been one of the things that has cost them the most. And Andujar, everyone knows, he's been the worst third baseman in baseball defensively, but Gleyber Torres has mental lapses. When Aaron Judge is not in the outfield defense suffers because Stanton is not the same type of outfielder, and then that leaves you weak at a corner spot instead of having Gardner, Hicks, and Judge, which are all three plus defenders. And Bird or Voit, they're both average at best. So I really think that the defense on this team, it does not bode well for a one-game playoff spot. I have nightmares of a boneheaded play costing them a couple runs in a wild card game.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that too. And like you said, Judge is sort of he's what makes this team click, both offensively and certainly defensively in the outfield. You know, he should get a good amount of MVP votes just for anyone who's watched this team since he's gone down. You know, it's been over a month now. It's been like almost 7 weeks at this point. It's been, you know, we're almost closing on the 2 month time period since he got hit on the wrist. But yeah, this team, I don't know. And you mentioned Voit and Bird. They're both, you know, pretty much the same at first. Voit took his job with what he's done over the last couple of weeks. But I just, you know, if anyone's expecting Luke Voit to, you know, continue his Shane Spencer act into the postseason, I wouldn't count on that. I like I said, I'm a huge Bird supporter. It's hard to support him these days, but I would still, you know, I would give him a good amount of at-bats. I would split the time between the two over these next 2 weeks. And I really, you say he might not be on the postseason roster. I would play him in the one game playoff.
How could you do that?
Yeah, I know, it's crazy. And for me, the people that I do get on, and to not get on Sanchez and to not get on Betances last year and to not really get on Bird this year outside of a few moments, you know, Bird, he's still, I don't know, I just still want to believe that he's the Greg Bird we saw 3 years ago and last October he's their best hitter flat out. I mean, he had a 4-something on base percentage. He had like 10 pitch at bats every time up. The huge home run off Miller that saved the season in game 3. And, you know, when you watch that video, if you watch the GIF of him doing that, when you're a left-handed batter and you're turning around Andrew Miller in a 0-0, you know, elimination game to almost the upper deck at New Yankee Stadium, which is just ridiculous. You know, that guy's still in there, and Luke Voit can go and, you know, he can homer off these garbage relievers and these 4 and 5 starters that he has the last few weeks. But I don't know. To me, I'd still play. I'm probably the only person in the world that has that idea right now. But I would still play. Hit him 8th, hit him 9th, whatever you want to do. But I mean, it's still in there. That what we've seen from Greg Bird, that's still in there somewhere.
And the importance, I've beaten this topic to death. The importance of Greg Bird being a left-handed hitter is so key to this team, because we said all of the right-handed hitters that they have, Didi is not a 3 or 4 hitter. Greg Bird, in theory, is a 3 or 4 hitter. If he could produce like he did in September or in October of last year, it completely changes the dynamic of the lineup. But having said all that, all Greg Bird at this point is an idea. That's all he is at this point. We have an idea of what Greg Bird should be. He's not that right now. So you can't play him.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing to say in defense of Greg Bird there. I mean, you could say anything you want about him, that he's an idea, he's this, and there is no defense. There's no rebuttal, because he's been that bad and he's been that much of a letdown. And, you know, maybe we saw the best of what he'll ever give us because of the injuries. Maybe he just lost it. I don't know. But like you said, he is the left-handed presence. When, you know, he was, you know, got one of the only 3 hits in the wild card game 3 years ago against Keuchel, when no one on the Yankees could hit Keuchel. You know, he was given the number 3 spot in the order to start last season right away, despite coming back from missing a whole season. They put him right away in the number 3 spot this year. You've heard Aaron Judge say this guy, when healthy, is the best hitter in the organization. So it's not crazy. I mean, it's in there for Greg Bird. I don't know. Maybe his ankle won't let him be the hitter he was. Maybe it's his shoulder, but it's still in there. And, you know, I have a good idea what Luke Voit is. I don't think Luke Voit is that far removed from Tyler Austin. I think they're essentially the same exact player. They'll have their moments, but the most of the time they'll disappoint you. But I think Greg Bird can have, you know, expanded moments. I think he could go on a type of run that we've seen at times this year, when everyone thought, here he is, he's going to turn it around, and he didn't end up doing it. But hit him 8th or 9th, but I don't know. They have to get left-handed bats in there somehow, or they're just going to get embarrassed in the playoffs. And if you want to bat him, you know, at the bottom of the order, you need that left-handed presence. And we've seen, when he's right, what he can do, and he can carry this team.
Yeah, we've seen it. Maybe Boone, like you said, will give him some at-bats over the next 2 weeks, and he can turn things around. Neil, thanks very much for joining us. I'm a little worried about your mental stability with this team right now. Hopefully they turn it around just for your sake.
Well, I'm more worried about, like, my actual physical health. I mean, where I was last year sitting, you know, in the right field bleachers when they went down 3-0 in the wild card game, I have this awful feeling already. You know, I'm already looking at flights to go across the country for the one game playoff. If it's not here, which is just, you know, absurd, because that could be an awful, awful, awful flight home. But yeah, I mean, I just need my heart. Hopefully my heart and, you know, everything can last through another crazy October with this team.
That could be a very expensive 24-hour trip for you.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the idea is that there's no point, because if they do win, then okay, they just go up to Boston. It's obviously much closer to us than Oakland is. And if they lose, well, you certainly don't want to be out there for that. So yes, the chances are I won't be going to the one game playoff unless, you know, it's in New York, which, you know, hopefully I'll see you there for it.
All right, Neil, thanks again. Good stuff.
Thanks, Andrew.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes, and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it, and go Yankees.